two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the sky so blue, the birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care.
Hey, hey,
hey, hey. It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Welcome back to the Greenhouse Show. I'm Dave Meekham sitting in for Maria Chaleos this morning, of course, alongside Ton Bettis. And Ton, we've been talking a little bit this morning about the heat and how that's affected our plants, and talked a little bit about tomatoes, but the heat's tough on a lot of different plants, isn't it?
It is very tough on a lot of different plants. It doesn't matter if it's green beans, onions, even shrubs. You know, we're seeing a lot of burning bush struggling, which is actually quite common. There's, of all the shrubs we commonly grow, that's one of the wimpiest, but that's a topic for another time. But yeah, the heat's really impacting lots of different things.
I know that a lot of time my maple tree, I'll see the sun just scorched, you know, really hard on the leaves on my maple. Of course, my maple struggles anyway because of iron chlorosis. But the sun, particularly on that tree, seems to be really rough.
It really can be. And so, you know, we've got a text in here that says, I have a northern columnar maple, which I've never heard of northern columnar maple. I'm wondering if it's Norway. It says a couple of weeks ago, they had a mixture of green leaves in the maple, and there's some leaves growing brown, and they want to know if there's a magic brew they can mix up to make the tree go green again. And I'm not sure if they have leaf scorch or iron chlorosis, which with Norway maple, I would suspect that it's just more summer leaf scorch, because they would have seen those yellow leaves first on the iron chlorosis before they turn brown.
And isn't the Norway maple one of the ones that is supposed to be well adapted to our soil?
Yes, to our soil, but no to our climate.
Okay.
So it doesn't get iron chlorosis, but what it happens is that when it gets exposed to high 90s, low 100s for days in a row, because the tree is native to Northern Europe, in a climate very similar to Portland or Seattle, you know, we put it here in the desert and it struggles. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times a Norway maple will get leaf scorch on it, but it won't they don't oftentimes get iron chlorosis. So in this situation, all they can really do is make sure that the tree is deep watered. You know, if it's in the lawn, that becomes a little more difficult, but they might want to run a sprinkler under it once every 3 or 4 weeks for a couple hours to drive water deeply. But all they can really do is wait and see. If they wanted to text or send some pictures of the tree to our Facebook, the KSL Greenhouse Facebook Messenger portion, where we can take messages, I might be able to look at the pictures. But I really suspect that it's probably summer leaf scorch or maybe a root disease, and not iron chlorosis, but I won't know for sure.
All right. So that would be great if you send that picture in and Tom can get a little bit better look at it.
Yeah. We've got another text here where somebody is wanting to know what to do with their onions and how to store them. Mm. The hot weather, we've taken lots of calls from folks saying all of a sudden my onions are browning out or the stalks are starting to fall over. Well, this time of year on onions, it's really common for the leaves to go from sticking straight in the air to start to bend over. And that's a sign that they're getting close to being ready. A lot of people at that point will go in and break them, like just bend them over and not completely break them off. But what that does is it reduces the amount of nutrients and energy produced in the stalk, in the leaves that go to the bulb. But even though everybody does it, it's not a best practice. You should just leave those onions alone and let them turn brown naturally. And so if they're starting to fall over, that's fine. And if you wanted to, you could reduce, don't totally just dry them out, but reduce the amount of irrigation. And that will also help those leaves dry down naturally. And once those leaves are mostly brown, you can harvest them out of the ground and then put them somewhere kind of warm, you know, on newspaper, like, you know, inside your home or a shady area, and just let them dry. You might want to go out and just gently turn them once in a while. And when those outside portions of the onion kind of turn papery, then they're best stored at 32 degrees.
Okay.
One other thing. If you did seed onion and you would have had to have started them in January or purchased them, seed onion oftentimes will store through the winter. But if you did sets or bulbs, those will need to be stored at 32, but you want to use them or process them within a few months, because the sets and bulbs don't often store well. So
they don't age as well. Okay.
They don't.
All right. Well, let's try and get a call in before we have to take another break. Diane's been patiently waiting in Holiday. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning. I have about four questions now after I've listened to you. the first is, I have a lot of raspberries, and I'm just wondering if I'm too anxious to get them cut out, the old ones. If I can do it now, is it going to hurt them?
Are they still green?
Yeah, but you can tell which ones have had the raspberries on, so, you know, easily cut them.
Well, you could, but if they have green leaves on there, those leaves are the factory that's producing the energy for the plants, and they're still producing energy that's going to the roots. And so you
want to
wait until they go brown with first hard frost, and then cut them out then.
Okay. My second question is, I noticed some rust underneath the leaves of my apple trees. Is that something I can treat or not?
We don't commonly have cedar apple rust here, and so you may be seeing something else. So what I would recommend doing is, you can either send pictures to your local extension office or their email. You'd have to call into the Salt Lake Extension office and see what their Master Gardener email is. You could upload those to Utah Gardening Experts on Facebook. That might be the easiest thing, is Utah Gardening Experts. And we could look at some pictures, because you may have apple blister mites causing that. We occasionally get rust, but it's every time someone thinks they have it, it's about 1 in 50 times they actually do, and there's actually something else going on.
I see. Okay. Yeah, we don't spray the apples, but we get enough that we can make some good apple pies. So there you go. My last question is, I have a Satsuma plum, and I have also a Santa Rosa next to it, but the Santa Rosa is so huge and right by the fence. So we are going to take it out. Should I plant another plum tree close?
Well, we grow both Japanese and European plums, and so you have to have another Japanese plum to cross-pollinate. because a European plum is distantly related enough that they're not genetically compatible.
Uh-huh. Okay, so a Santa Rosa planted next to it, that did the trick that you were talking about?
Yes, that those are the boyfriend and friend and girlfriend you need.
Okay.
So there are other Japanese plums out there. Shiro is another common one. But you just, or if the neighbors have a Japanese plum within a couple hundred feet, that would be fine too. But if you're unsure, you will need to find another Japanese plum.
Okay. If I have one in the far backyard, the Satsuma is in the front yard. And I have planted another Santa Rosa in the very far backyard, probably, I don't know, 200 feet away.
I'll bet you would get sufficient pollination as long as they were blooming at the same time, which they should be. So that's close enough. You might get a little reduction in yield, but that's generally close enough that you would get a good crop.
Okay, that answers my questions. I appreciate it.
You're
okay,
welcome. Diane. Well, thanks for calling in with your questions today. We're going to take a break now, but on the other side of the break, we're going to come back and answer Tim's question. He's calling in from Riverton. And if you have a question, give us a call. KSL Talk is the line, 575-8255. And we'll be right back with more on the KSL Greenhouse Show.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Welcome back to the Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio. Anton, just looking at a tomato text that just came in here. My super sweet 100 cherry tomato plant has spots on the leaves. There are a lot of tomatoes. Is this something that can be treated?
Well, I'm actually on the Facebook page and looking at the pictures, and it honestly maybe looks like insect damage on them. And so looking at the pictures, it's really hard to say what it is, because it would just almost need close-ups of the undersides of the leaves and see.
Possibly aphids?
Not aphids, because there's no leaf curl and they're not sticky. It more looks like something has been sucking the juice out, which thrips and spider mites. Well, and aphids do that, but they don't cause the stippling that we're seeing. And so I might want to look a little bit more research, because the tomatoes are so hard. Because we had another one saying, my tomato leaves are brown. Why? And I don't know, you know. There's so many things that can go wrong with tomatoes. You know, for that delicious fruit that we get off of them, people put up with a lot to get it. And there's tons of diseases, lots of insects. And so, you know, to say that, it really requires a lot of investigation. And they're actually, when I talk to folks about plant problems, for me, one of the most frustrating, because brown leaves are brown leaves. And, you know, with the COVID especially, it's not like I can just pop out and look, you know, with travel restrictions and things. And so those tomatoes are very difficult, but I'll take a closer look at these, and I may need some more pictures of the leaves up close, both on the tops and bottoms of the leaves.
And it's also the case that some tomato varieties are more susceptible than others, right?
They are. If I was just talking to a gardener the other day that grows six or eight different varieties of tomatoes, And one of them will be full of thrips. One of them will be full of aphids. The other has grasshoppers. And so it usually boils down to not only which one is most tasty to that particular insect, but the one that has the fewest defensive chemicals in the leaves. And so the insects might flock to that particular plant over, you know, they might go toward your heirlooms instead of the celebrity or vice versa.
Right. Right. That's one of the great things about the celebrity, and we've talked about this before, is disease resistance, and they're just hardier plants, it seems like.
They really are. And so especially with diseases, if you've had problems or you're new to tomatoes, you know, one or two that I would look at growing are Early Girl and Celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
Super easy, disease resistant, and usually will get you a good yield. Now, they're not foolproof, but once you kind of figure things out with the tomatoes, you can start veering toward other varieties and things like that. But a hybrid is usually the easiest to get started with.
All right, well, let's shift over to some lawn care, and we'll take Tim's call. Tim's calling in from Riverton, and you're looking at planting some grass, Tim?
Yes. I had talked to you earlier, several months ago, about the proper time to plant the grass. It's just going to be some pasture grass out back, not grass seed, the traditional grass seed. And you said the end of August, 1st of September. What I'm wondering, if I get a little more specific with you, is, you know, the different temperatures this year. What's the ideal temperature overnight and during the day to plant this?
Well, as a refresher, do you have access to irrigation?
Yes.
Okay. So the ideal temperatures are somewhere in the mid-80s during the day and the mid-50s to low-60s at night.
Okay. And is this like traditional grass where once you get that seed in the ground, you never let it dry out?
Correct.
And it just comes up and, you know, you don't walk on it or drive on it or any of that. But after about, you know, several months, you can usually mow it.
Yeah, and so you might even be able to mow it this fall if you have enough time to, you know, really get it going. But it's usually a full calendar year before you consider it established.
Right, okay.
You know, one thing I would do, once you get it up and it's an inch or so tall, is, boy, it'd be difficult to do, but if you could get out there, even, you know, a little taller, but a fertilizer application wouldn't hurt. But of course, you can do that when you put the seed in. Sometimes all the watering you have to do drives a lot of the nitrogen out of the soil by the time you really get it going. But because you can't walk on it for 6 weeks, you may do a light application of fertilizer at the same time as you seed.
Okay, I don't think I'll have that problem. And that I've always done that when I plant grass seed in the spring. But in this case, this used to be a horse pasture, and it is a corral, actually, and it's got a lot of nitrogen in it already, so hopefully I will.
Have you had it tested to make sure there's not too much?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
So I think that we got it. I'm hoping to have a successful crop of pasture grass. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, Tim, good luck with that. And when it comes to grasses, it's, as you just said, Ton, it's a little bit early to start planting, but we're getting close to that point.
Well, it's not too early to start prepping.
Right.
So what I would recommend doing is get everything prepped in that mid to late August, right when we start to cool down or about to, that's a great time to put that seed down, because a lot of the weed seeds require what's called vernalization, or a winter period before they germinate in the spring, but grass seed doesn't. And so if you get that seed up and established, you oftentimes have far fewer weed problems by seeding in late summer than you would seeding in spring.
And when it comes to grass, soil prep is everything.
It really is. You know, a lot of times I'll watch, you know, new homes being installed. And a lot of times, you know, as a perk, they'll guarantee that your front yard's landscaped. And so what they'll do is bring in a couple inches of topsoil, and then somebody on a backhoe or a bobcat puts the shovel down and raises the front tires off the ground with that front scoop at a really narrow, shallow angle and drive backwards back and forth. And that does level it, but it also compacts the soil. And then a couple of years later, a lot of times they wonder why their grass is struggling. And so to level your soil, the absolute worst thing you can do is to use a really heavy tractor and scrape the bucket back and forth, because that can, especially in clay soil, cause a lot of problems. And so, unfortunately, it's a lot harder work, but a landscape rake is the best option for leveling.
Yeah, and there's so many other things to consider.
You know, putting in some compost if you have the
exactly,
money.
Exactly, yeah.
Put in compost now, get it worked into the soil, get your sprinkling system ready, and do your final leveling, and maybe loosen the soil a bit, you know, in another 2 or 3 weeks. But getting that compost in now and watered in will help it start breaking down, and it's much better to do compost a month ahead of time than actually putting it down the same day you do your seed.
You have access to that soil right now that you'll never have again, at least not as long as there's grass there.
No, and I've used this a couple times, but J.D. Gunnell and I were in Logan looking at some homes, and somebody called, and you could see the only place the grass was healthy was everywhere they trenched their sprinkling system. They were new homeowners that had bought the home already built, but JD just made a comment saying, how do you tell somebody that their lawn problems, all their lawn problems, boil down to somebody doing a crappy job on preparation 5 years ago? And so it's just so imperative, because a lot of times sometimes in the worst case scenarios, and Tim Hughes knows this, the only way to fix bad prep is to tear the lawn out and start over.
And that's the problem, you know, because you can head off so many problems with the proper soil prep, and it not only, you know, fixes the leveling problems and those kinds of things, but then it gives your grass the best start possible, and you're going to be so much happier and more successful if you put the time and effort into it now before the grass actually goes in.
So before we go to news, one text: should I clean up fallen peaches or let them sit? Clean them up. All you're going to do is attract wasps and stuff.
Yeah, you bring in the critters. And it's just nicer to have them out of the way anyway, right?
It is.
All right, we are going to take a break here for some news, traffic, and weather, and some ABC news at the top of the hour. But coming back, we're going to answer more of your calls, and the lines are wide open for you right now. KSL Talk is the number, 575-8255, and we'll be back with more on the KSL Greenhouse Show.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.